White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 530.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with theWarEagleReader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, here at 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock John's time, our Patreon.com family. We're starting exactly an hour late. Man, John, did I ever mess up last week by saying we had our technology problem solved? What was I thinking? Did I just, like, not knock on wood or not throw salt over my shoulder, or was a black cat walking across our internet connection?
I think you just dared the technology gods to be like, oh, you think so, do you?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's my end, sometimes it's your end, sometimes it's both. And sometimes we really have no idea what's going on, but we're still working on it. I do think that we should have the problem solved pretty soon, but again, knocking on wood. But that's because we're making even more wholesale changes. And so we'll see, but hopefully this will be the last time we have to deal with all this. We've got the problems on my end, I think, solved. We're getting the problems on your end solved. Everything should be good. In the meantime, we have a show to do tonight, and we are currently watching the Baylor and Gonzaga national championship game, which Baylor was just running away and hiding in the first 10 minutes or so of it. Gonzaga's putting in a little bit of an effort now to kind of hang close, but what are you thinking about this game?
Well, I mean, it looked like Baylor was going to blow them out of the gym, and they still might. They're up, I don't know, 13 or something right now.
Yeah.
Kind of late first half, and they still look pretty solidly controlled to me. So they really came out completely focused. Davion Mitchell, former Auburn player, came out and just tore him up. So.
And I was noting to you a little while ago while we were fighting our technology fights that Baylor started the game 5 for 5 on three-pointers. That's always a good help. You know, it's a good boost to your program. And I was noting, though, that if you took those 5 for 5 three-pointers away, Baylor was still winning like 14 to 12 or something. So it was very impressive. But, yeah, there is an Auburn connection there, which is Mitchell. But we have a few things to cover tonight. We are going to talk about our favorite and most impressive and greatest Auburn kickers. And I found a couple of things online that kind of gave me some statistics that kind of blew my mind about that. Honestly, I was like, whoa, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, such and such, or you have a gut feeling about such and such. And then you look at the actual numbers and you're like, yeah, and you'll see what I mean in just a minute. So we're going to get to that in just a minute, but we got to talk about current happenings with Auburn sports in basketball. Sharif Cooper actually gave his official notice that he is moving on, and I think we thought that all along, right?
We did. There was a chance he would come back, but it didn't happen, and now he's officially gone. And, you know, again, we're waiting to see one or two other people, but it is exciting, and, you know, I'm happy for him. But now there's a big hole to fill, and so the big drama is kind of what happens next to help fill that hole.
Yeah, and we have it's interesting. I heard some talk. There's that the player we're getting from one of the Carolina schools, right? Zepp
Jasper.
Yeah, I was hearing talk. My understanding was he was coming in basically as our new point guard, but I was hearing somebody was saying that he might actually be better shooting guard, and we might still be looking for an actual point guard. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, again, we're bringing in Zepp Jasper. We're bringing in Trey Alexander, who's a true freshman who's more of a shooting guard. I think Jasper could play either position, but one of the things we've learned in the last year is one point guard is not enough. We need two qualified real point guards on the team. Mm-hmm. Even if one is a younger player or more of a role player, backup kind of guy, we cannot go with just one point guard. So I think they are looking for other players. I think there's a lot of big-time guards who have associated their names with Auburn and the potential transfers. Xavier Pinson is a guy who's played at Missouri for several years. and is very experienced, and you know, would be a really good addition to Auburn. I mean, he's a good ball handler, distributor, and a good free throw shooter, a good defender. So I think he could play, do that. I mean, Jasper, the guy we got coming in, he's not as big as Samir Dowdy, but he's a Samir Dowdy-ish kind of player. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think he could play either spot, but he may be more naturally an off guard, but he could do the point guard thing and be pretty successful with it. So then, you know, Pinson is down to four schools. It's, you know, Auburn, Georgia, Arkansas, and Nebraska he's going to end up at. There's a, you know, there's a All-American point guard in this coming class named Ty Washington, who's linked to Auburn. There's another transfer guard, a couple other transfer guards. One is named Wendell Green from Eastern Kentucky. One, his name from Rhode Island, his name is Fats Russell.
That's a great name. Yeah, he should be a center. Anybody named Fats should be a center, man. Come on.
He should be a pool player. But so,
well, yes, but.
So then the, you know, the 2 years from now or a year from now, Auburn is supposed to sign another top point guard who's already committed to Auburn from Georgia named Scoot Henderson. And so there is some discussion that he will do the reclassification thing. Where he's currently a junior, where he would then basically turn into a senior and then sign with Auburn and play this coming season even. So that he would be very young at that time. But again, I think he's kind of the long-term future point guard. So I think, you know, I could definitely see Auburn getting one of these other transfer guards, and then potentially one, you know, the if Scoot can't reclassify, maybe we get the other grad high school player. So I think part of what's happening now is Auburn's churning out a bunch of good players, and they high school guys and transfers see it as a place they can come and play and get to the NBA and win.
Darn right.
They see it as a place they can come and have big success, and so they want to play here, and they like, you know, Pearl's system is fun, player friendly, and so they want to play for him. So I think you're going to see Auburn get a couple more transfers. The other one that's out there, not a guard, but you know, Auburn recruited this guy a couple of years ago named Walker Kessler, who's like a 6'11". He's a center, but he's more of a perimeter kind of center. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. More of an outside shooter, face the basket guy, and he went to North Carolina and left North Carolina already to transfer. So he picked North Carolina over Auburn, and now he's already left North Carolina, is transferring. And so one of the scenarios that's out there in, you know, people who think a lot about basketball is say like JT Thor actually leaves and goes to the NBA, and then Auburn signs this Kessler guy to replace him. Yeah. But we're already bringing in the big freshman, already the five-star coming in next year. So I think that's one scenario that's out there. If Thor doesn't leave, I'm not sure that we need Kessler or have a lot of playing time for him. So I'm not sure that would work, but he is a different kind of player than the big guys we have. You know, he's not like the other centers on Auburn's roster. So it's a different fit, but
it's just amazing to me that we can lose as many players as we've been losing the last couple of years and still have like a maxed out roster. I know that the basketball roster is really small compared to the football roster. I get that. But, you know, it just seems like we have 4, 5, 6 big players leaving every year now, either graduating or going pro. This will be our third year in a row to have a first round, you know, probably draft pick come out of the team. And that's never, I don't think, been done before in Auburn history. And yet we just reload, plug them back in, and keep going. So we miss the experience. And I was going to say, it seems to me like point guards coming out of high school should be just lining up to go to Auburn and play for Bruce, because he basically put Jared Harper in the NBA. I mean, if you, you know, he's like, you know, bless his heart, he's like 4 feet tall, but he's a dynamo. And getting all that experience and playing for Bruce, I mean, you know, made him such a great player. And
well, you're right. And you've seen players develop under Bruce, right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, you've seen guys get better and make a leap. You know, where Bryce Brown was to where he ended up, Jared.
Oh, yeah. Okoro. Chuma,
even in 1 year. So I think you've seen guys develop over this current team. So I think, you know, players look at that and go, it's a good situation.
And the thing about Sharif, too, that kind of amazed me, I mean, when you watched him play, you could kind of sense it, but you know, giving out assists and being like the stir that straws the drink rather than the drink, you know what I mean? It's a little more of a subtle thing. You get the sense overall the team is working better, they're scoring better, but there's still, it's a little more level of sophistication beyond just that guy just dunked the ball or something, you know, or you got hit a long three-pointer. Yes. And so, you know, just watch Sharif, you had a sense that the team was better, and you could see him make occasional really amazing plays, but it's not like he was out there going like Michael Jordan for 50 points or something, and so it was a little more hidden, and at least to me, okay? And so when I heard the statistics about how, like, he led the nation in, like, the difference between when he was in and when he wasn't in or whatever, he led the nation in that assist kind of numbers. And I'm just like, man, I knew he was good, but I never would have guessed that he led the entire country in the things that he was doing, you know, out there. To me, that's pretty amazing. And so with that in my pocket, I'm like, okay, well, now I can see where he thinks he could go ahead and go pro. You know, if all he had was like a handful of games between not being allowed to play and then getting hurt, you know, you'd be like, well, you know, don't you want to play like an entire, like one actual season before you go pro? But with that kind of statistic in his resume, I guess I could see where, you know, that he feels like he's shown enough already. So I guess
it's fair. And again, I don't blame Sharif for leaving, but I blame the NCAA for not letting him play a full season. That's 100% on them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No doubt about that. That's ridiculous. So let's see. So the only other thing about basketball we really had, and we're now moving into halftime, I believe, with Baylor up 47-37. So Gonzaga made something of a comeback to kind of keep it respectable there. We'll see what they do in the second half. They could come out on a 10-0 run and tie it up for all we know. We're going to next week, because everything's kind of still up in the air with this game going on right now. On next week's show, we will announce the winner of our big bracket contest, and we'll announce the best name for a team. So tune in next week for that. Meanwhile, the football team had the week off, so I guess there really wasn't a whole lot going on current events-wise, other than I guess this is a week for the coaches, the coaching staff, to be doing a whole lot of evaluating and a lot of soul-searching, don't you think?
That's right. Well, and we heard from our new offensive line coach, Will Friend, today. That was, I think, the first time he's talked, and that was good. I think they're doing a lot of evaluation, looking at the film, thinking about what they want to do. And also, I think the other thing you're hearing is that, you know, the NCAA is expected to open up kind of potentially on-campus recruitment visits, like in the summertime. And so you're hearing high school players start to announce, I'm scheduling official visits to Auburn in like June or July. So
that'll help. Mm-hmm. That can only help us.
Yes.
That can only help us. You know, there's a big argument to be made that not being able to do that for so long really hurt us more than the average program, because we so depend on making that good impression when players are on campus. So, yeah, that would be really nice. That would be great. Not a lot else going on. Do we have any other basketball or football news to talk that we need to cover before we move into our big topic for this week?
I don't think so. We have not really a lot else happening.
You know, John, I'm not usually watching TV during our show, but and I remember I used to listen to the Atlanta radio sports stations when I lived in Atlanta. They would be talking about how they'd have like the TVs on in their studio to kind of get the breaking news and everything. And they would comment on how sometimes their radio broadcast shows would lag because everybody was just watching something on TV on the air and nobody's talking. So we're not doing that. But I will admit that I got distracted because they just ran like back-to-back two commercials with Captain Marvel on them in her car, whatever car commercial she does now. So I'm a big fan of Captain Marvel. So I didn't hear a word that you said just now. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Yeah, so we don't have any more basketball or football talk.
No.
Okay, so the thing before we get to our break, and in just a minute we'll thank our patrons and talk about a big release that we have from White Rocket out right now, coming out tomorrow, which will be out, I guess, when you guys listen to this today, Tuesday. We were going to talk about different positions in the offseason, like our greatest ever in those positions, I guess. And what spurred this was I saw somebody on Twitter, of course, listed like the best SEC kickers of the 2000s, and they had, three Auburn kickers on the list of like 50. And honestly, every Auburn kicker since the 2000s and some before should be on that list because we have had great kickers forever. I've said before on here, John, that I think the last year we had a kicker who really struggled was 1986. So, and I can't even remember his name now. That was the year before Win Lyle came onto the scene. So, it was like Chris Knapp, I think. Bless his heart. Okay. Chris Knapp was our last kicker that really struggled. And because he replaced the 84-85 kicker, and now I can't remember who that was. Dang. Del Greco graduated after 83. We had somebody 84 and 85. Knapp came in 86 that didn't have do a good job. And then 87, we got Win Lyle. And we've just had great kickers every year since we got Win Lyle. It's really amazing. And so I wanted to talk about who we thought are like our five best, and we can use different criteria. You make a good point of what criteria define great kickers. There's accuracy, which would like be percentage made. But there's also like scoring, like how many points did they score? There's, you know, a career, there's a season. So, and there's other things like, you know, in clutch situations and other jobs that they have, like kickoffs. And you ask the question, can our current Anders Carlson make that list? Okay, well, I went to the page on Wikipedia that shows our kickers going back forever, and it has field goals made, career and single season and single game, and it has field goal percentage in a career and a single season. And I have a couple of observations I wanted to make, and then we can discuss, all right, and then we can rank or whatever you want to. I knew that Daniel Carlson was good, but good Lord. Now, I jotted down a few notes as I broke down the numbers on Daniel Carlson, and here's what I got. Daniel Carlson attempted 114 field goals in his 4 years at Auburn, which is 34 more than second place, which was Wes Byram. Daniel Carlson holds the record for the best field goal percentage in a career at Auburn, and for the most field goals made in a single season, and the second most field goals made in a single season, and the third most field goals made in a single season. That is insane. He's also tied with Al Del Greco for the most in a single game, 6. So my question then is, was he just the very accurate kicker on a team that ended up having to kick a lot of field goals? In other words, if like Pat Dye had been our coach those years or somebody else instead of Gus in those particular years, would he have had those opportunities? But the converse of that is, did Gus stick him out there to kick because he had a longer range and was more accurate than usual? In other words, you know, it's like the chicken and the egg. Was he just a good kicker on teams that kept getting stopped on the 25? Or was he a kicker that would be sent out to attempt field goals that other kickers, the coach would say, no, we have to punt or we're going to go for it or something. You know what I mean? So we can discuss that. And then in the 2000s, Carlson has the highest made percentage at 80.7, whereas his brother Anders is tied with Cody Parkey at 73.6. Okay. That was the numbers, the stats I wanted to throw at you because they're insane. Now, what's your initial thoughts when you think about Auburn's greatest kickers? Is like, you know, what comes to your mind out of all that?
I think to go back to your point, I think part of the benefit thing, and the thing we have to, in my mind, kind of pull out of the equation is that some of these kickers were on offenses that gave them a lot more opportunities than others. And that doesn't mean the kickers were better or worse. It just means they had more chances. So I think let's start with something simple. Like, I think field goal percentage, but then also making big kicks in big moments, right? So yeah. I think those two things together. So, I mean, in career field goal percentage, you know, there's a certain group. But then in single season field goal percentage, the number one single season is Wes Byram.
Wesley Byram, 93.8%. Not in the national championship year. The national championship year isn't even in the top 10. It's 2009.
Mm-hmm. That's insane.
It's a year where we had a lot of offense, but they didn't have a power game other than Ben Tate. So they would pass their way down the field. Ben Tate would carry him down the field. But they did end up kicking a fair number of field goals, I think. But interestingly enough, if you look at the single season number of field goals made, that year is not even on the top 10. Byram made 17 in 2007 and 2010, but in 2009, he didn't even make 17. So he made 93.8%, but it was fewer than 17 field goals. Whereas, how many field goals did Daniel Carlson make in 2016, John?
28.
Dang, man, 28. I guess that 16 offense, you know, it had enough juice to get down the field, but they just couldn't get out of through the red zone. The 2014 team kind of came to my mind as a team that used to stall out in the red zone a lot. But yes. But I guess 16 did even more.
But and, he was the 14 kicker as well.
Yeah,
you're right. That was only 18 field goals.
10 fewer, yeah, 10 fewer. Isn't that crazy? So. Let me just quickly hit the numbers here. Field goals made. All right. Again, I said this number in the abstract, but this is the mind-blowing statistic here. Field goals made in their career at Auburn, okay? Daniel Carlson, 92. The next guy after that is Byram with 60. So Carlson is just so far beyond anybody else. He's 32 more than second place. And then Byram is 60. Anders is already in third place with 53 in just three seasons. At that rate, I don't think he's going to catch his brother, but he's probably going to pass Wesley Byram for second place, and we'll have two Carlsons in first place and second place. How about that?
Yeah, I agree. But I think, I mean, you look last year, he had the second best season ever in Auburn history in terms of percentage in a season. That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Dang, man. That's right, because 19, he kind of struggled, but then he got it together in the Iron Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, he was just pretty solid all year long. Although, yeah, that's...
I think the numbers say he was better than pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. So, and going down just the number of field goals made, again, Carlson 92, Byram 60, Anders Carlson 53. Fourth place is John Vaughn with 50. And I've always thought of Vaughn as one of our better kickers.
Mm-hmm.
Although in percentage, he's down in ninth at just 72.5. He probably knocked about 10% off of his percentage record just at that one LSU game that he'll never live down. That took a chunk. That dropped him. I wonder how, if he could just remove that game from his resume, how much higher up on that ranking he would be. So number four is John Vaughn. Number five is Wynn Lyle and Damon Duvall tied at fifth with 45, although Lyle only kicked for three seasons. Then number seven is good old Al Del Greco, the greatest golfer in NFL history. And then number eight is Cody Parkey. And Cody Parkey's kind of, I always felt like Cody Parkey is like almost our forgotten kicker. Because he was right between Byram and Carlson. But he was great. I thought he was a very good kicker for us. He never had a single season that was huge, but he was just consistent, you know. In fact, in terms of overall field goal percentage, he's currently tied with Anders Carlson at 73.6. And then number nine is Portella, Jorge or George, however they pronounced it. I don't remember, this was before. It was 77, 78, 79. He kicked a lot of extra points for Cribbs and Brooks and Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
And then number 10 is good old Scott Etheridge from the last Pat Dye and the first Terry Bowden team with 34 in just 2 years. Okay, Matt Hawkins did not make that list, and there's Jarrett Holmes, actually, is field goal percentage is eighth all-time career field goal percentage. That pretty much covers all the ones. Matt Hawkins in a single season is number four for 1995 at 86.7. All right, that's all the numbers I just wanted to throw out in terms of numbers. There's no doubt Daniel Carlson's the greatest field goal kicker in Auburn history, is there? I mean, there's just no doubt.
I think you're correct, but I think Anders Carlson, you know, has one more year. He's going to be second all-time in most field goals ever made at Auburn. And if he has a good year, he could move up, you know, several spots on the career completion percentage, you know, and be in the neighborhood of, I would say, second or third.
Here's the thing that's amazing about that, though. I keep coming back to this number. Anders is probably going to pass Wes Byram for second all time, and that's great. But to pass his brother, he would need to kick 40 field goals. And if we're kicking 40 field goals, something is very wrong. Something is very, very wrong with the offense if we're kicking 40. That's almost like, that's like averaging 3 field goals a game every game. Little round 3 a game, and I don't, you just don't end up doing it. You don't average 3 a game, because that means there's going to be games you don't kick any. So then you got to kick like 6 to make up for the one where you didn't kick any to stay on the average, and it's just not going to happen. So yeah, he's definitely going to be in second, but he's never, never, ever going to catch his brother. There's just no way. 92 is just astonishing. 92 field goals in 4 years. Okay, so I think we can firmly say Daniel Carlson is the greatest kicker in Auburn history. Who do you like? Let me ask you this. Who do you like after him? Who would you, if you couldn't have Daniel Carlson, who would you take? And then, who do you think is second? And then who would you take if you had to pick one on your team?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, the question is, if you had to kick, if you had one game and one kick,
yeah,
and you could pick any kicker in Auburn history to attempt that kick, who would you want?
So what do you think? See, I got to say, Matt Hawkins, he's third in career percentage, 78.8. Yep. But yet all I remember is him missing that field goal against Georgia to cost us the win in 94, and then missing the field goal against Arkansas in 95, if I remember correctly.
I agree. I can't go there. I can't go to Matt Hawkins. And I want to say Byram, honestly, just because he made big kicks.
Yes. That's where I lean.
And I'm there, but I'm also like, do I think his leg was as strong as some of these other kickers?
I don't know, but I
sure trust him.
Yeah, I think if it's inside of like 40 yards, Byram is my guy. In fact, I don't have the – in fact
I don't have facts to back this up.
But I think that I would be willing to bet that the majority of the kicks that Byram missed were longer ones. I feel like if you got him inside of like 40 yards, he was automatic. But they put him out there a few times to kick long ones, and he was like 50% beyond like 40. So if I'm going to kick a field goal like the end of the national championship game, I want Wesley Byram all the way. But if it's got to be like a 50-yarder with a wind blowing, honestly, you know, in those circumstances, you know who you might look to? And you're going to laugh. Damon Duvall.
Oh, I knew it. I knew you were going to say that.
He, you know, honestly, didn't he set some kind of record for like having 3 weeks in a row where he kicked the game-winning field goal for Tuberville?
He did.
Beat Florida, beat Mississippi State, beat somebody, Vanderbilt maybe, somebody else, I think. I think he kicked the kick that beat Vanderbilt, and then they missed the fake kick the next play. And
I feel like I'd take Jarrett Holmes over him, but.
Yeah. But see, what this shows is that we have had so many great kickers. I mean, some programs look at this and go, you know, we've got two guys to choose from ever, really. But we've got – I have never understood how we don't put more kickers in the NFL, because we've had such great kickers come through, such dependable, you know, kickers. I mean, you know, like Del Greco, he's not the guy I would have thought would be the long mainstay in the NFL, but he probably had the longest NFL career of any of them, hadn't he? Probably.
I think so.
Yeah, he's there forever. He was like with the Packers, the Oilers. I can't remember who else. I don't even know if Cody Parkey or Daniel Carlson are still kicking. They kind of like ran into trouble immediately, didn't they? I feel like they both had problems right out of the gate and ended up getting cut or something. And then ended up like I think Carlson ended up on like the Raiders or something.
He's still in the NFL. He's in the Raiders, but he got drafted by the Vikings.
Yeah.
And then they cut him, and then they haven't had a decent kicker since, and they've missed a bunch of big kicks. So there's some kind of karmic
good
biting them in the rear end going on, which we're all delighted about. So
good. I approve. All right, so that was it. So any other, let's see, that was just, the thing that I took from this little exercise was that Daniel Carlson is even better than I thought. I thought he was like one of our best, and I look at all these numbers and I'm like, he was just far and away the best. And then I do think that I feel like Byram was better in closer range than almost anybody else, but I feel like that he missed some from longer. I don't want to go through and go look at every missed field goal he made, but I feel like over his career they asked him to try some really long ones and he didn't do great on them. But inside of like 40, he was automatic. And again, I thought John Vaughn was a great kicker. I know he messed up that one game, but other than that, he was always dependable. Back in the years when we really needed him, like he was the kicker on the 04 team.
You are correct. So I get that. But
who's the most underrated of all the Auburn kickers that you see here? Which one is like gets the least attention and deserves better?
Etheridge.
That's fair. Yeah, I only kicked 2 years, but that 93 undefeated team sure did need him, didn't they?
Yeah, he was big.
Yes,
he was big.
Yeah. He kicked 34. He's in the top 10 career field goals made, and he's number two percentage.
Yeah. So I think Etheridge or Vaughn.
Yeah, and I feel like Cody Parkey is the forgotten man already, which is crazy.
He is, but that's what happens when two amazing guys come after you.
Well, he had Byram before him and Carlson right after him. Yeah, but he was still the kicker on the 13 team. He was actually a rare player that was on both the 2010 and 2013 teams. He got to play in two national championship games. He didn't actually kick in the two. He was the backup in 2010, but he was on that team. So he's got two SEC rings and a national championship ring, and not many other Auburn players can say that, that from that era that were on both teams. I guess Chris Davis was actually on both teams, interestingly enough.
Yes,
he just made a lot bigger difference on one than the other.
Fair.
All right. Well, that was cool. We'll see if we have any questions or anything about it in just a second on that. So, all right. I want to thank our patrons for keeping our show on the air, and I do that every week, of course. And if you want to become one, just go to www.auwishbone.com. Of course, we don't have commercials of the traditional style on this show. Our commercial is for our show. If you want to support our show, then you basically are one of our sponsors. You just go to www.auwishbone.com and just click on the big orange button to become a patron and just sign right up. Join all the other folks that do it, and I'll thank you very kindly. And we established last week that when you sign up, you can even put in your like username or whatever the name that I see on the list that they provide on the website for me so I can thank you. So you can call yourself whatever you want me to call you. We do have one little announcement. Tomorrow is April 6th. You're probably listening to this on April 6th or later. And White Rocket has a brand new book coming out. And it is, for those of you that have heard my occasional other co-host, Alan J. Porter, who co-hosts on all of our James Bond shows, and he and I do the racing shows and the reviews of racing movies and stuff occasionally for our open wheel show. Alan is a absolute, and his wife, both Jillian, are absolute huge James Bond experts. They're like members of the Ian Fleming Society. They actually like help restore the props, the vehicles from the Bond movies. They've got like a warehouse. That organization that he's a member of, they have a warehouse where they have like all these vehicles from the Bond movies that they've gone out and bought and restored to like they look like on screen. It's absolutely incredible. And Alan has written a couple of other books on the history of James Bond, but he has a new one out from White Rocket out April 6th, Tuesday, and it is called The Bond Lexicon. And it is like a 600-page compendium, maybe 400, 600. It's a bunch of pages, okay? Gorgeously illustrated. It's basically an encyclopedia of everything Bond. Everything that ever gets mentioned in any of the movies, the books, the comics, anything. He and his wife put an encyclopedia entry in alphabetical order in there, and it's illustrated. So, like, some minor character that's mentioned in passing in You Only Live Twice. You can look them up and get all the information. Where did they appear? Who are they? What did they do? What are their other appearances? You know, were they in the books? All that kind of stuff is in it. It's just an incredible reference. It's one of the most, I think, indispensable and vital Bond books that there's ever been from a couple that have an encyclopedic knowledge of that franchise. And so I'm really looking forward to it getting out tomorrow and people grabbing it. It's a huge oversized paperback, like I said, fully illustrated. And I'm so proud that he's putting it out through White Rocket. So just go to, if you want to find it, it is on sale now as of this show posting. So you can either go to Amazon and just look up James Bond Lexicon, like L-E-X-I-C-O-N, like a dictionary lexicon, or just go to www.whiterocketbooks.com, and it's right there on the front page of our website, www.whiterocketbooks.com, and check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. It'd make a great Christmas or birthday type present for the Bond fan or somebody that wants to get into Bond and wants to know all that information that's in that book. So check that out. Now, John, I want to thank the folks that are our current patrons and keep our programs on the air. Let me loosen up the vocal cords here. La 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 la, me me me. We have to thank, as always, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Phil M. Thor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, Hey You Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE Ritchie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, Chris. Oh, I tip my hat to you, Chris. Chris did it. He went in and changed his name. As I've been telling everybody how you do it, he actually changed his name to Chris the Hilton.
Nice. That is
awesome. I love that our patrons are enjoying this part of the show and play along with it. It's great. And again, you guys, you want to be part of this, just go to www.auwishbone.com and sign up, and you too can join. You put your crazy name in there and join the fun. Also, Colby Butler, I have to swallow, Danny Flack, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, and they sure did, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, welcome aboard, sir. Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Owlgorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright. Hey, Kathy, one of our newer members, too, and a big DragonCon attendee. Always see there, too. Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, Paul Bankson, and finally, Patreon's website is being slow. I'm clicking the button. And it's there it goes. Public landowner. Interesting. Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Weagle 87, Brant Rumble, and Chris, plus our one-time anonymous donors. I love that now that I've told folks how to change their name for what I say, we have a bunch of people that have been changing their name. And I look and I'm like, no, that's still somebody that's been around for a while. They just changed their name to something creative and I love it. So it's going to be interesting going forward to see if other people start doing that. But www.auwishbone.com. Thank you guys so, so much. We love you. We could not do it without you. And we're getting new technology for John this week, thanks to you, to once again overcome our technical limitations and that we have on us. All right. Oh, the other thing I was going to mention is we're starting a new Babylon 5 podcast. I had somebody ask me about it after last week's show. We're recording tomorrow night. So Andy Fix and I are going to be doing a bi-weekly show where we review several episodes. So we're going to review The Gathering and the first two episodes of season one for about an hour. And it'll go up probably in the, it'll go up in the White Rocket feed where you find our White Rocket podcast and you find the racing shows that Alan and I do. So I don't think it's going to get its own channel because I don't like to spend money that much. But if it ends up catching on and getting big, then it'll move to its own channel. But it'll start out, if you want to hear our Babylon 5 show, it'll just subscribe to the White Rocket Entertainment podcast, and it'll be in that regular feed. The same one that John and I did the Game of Thrones shows in and all that. That's kind of our catch-all for everything that's not James Bond or Auburn. So, okay. John, I believe we have a new Guess the Game. Are you ready for that?
I am ready.
All right. Jared has come through for us again, as he always does. And so this is a part of the program that everyone looks forward to these days. And here, let's let Jared take it away.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, a.k.a. The Death Probe, a.k.a. The Yard Sale Artist with Guess the Game. As always, I'm at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you want to suggest a play for Guess the Game. And guess what, folks? We have our very first suggested play making it into Guess the Game. In fact, this play was suggested weeks ago, probably about the time we did Guess the Game episode 2. I think this is episode 6 or 7 now. So this was suggested a while back, and the bad news is I can't remember who suggested it. So if you are the AU Wishbone fan who suggested this play, please speak up and send something to myself or Van or John to get your credit. And I tell you, it was a challenging play to grab an audio file from. It's a weird one, but I think you guys will get it. I won't talk anymore. Let's get into it.
The clock will start on my signal.
They got to get ready. Auburn's got to get ready. And it's got to start.
So they'll spot it.
Spot it. And it's got to start.
At the 15. And let's see. Can even get a playoff? They'll give them every chance. They'll
over.
Start the clock, and they don't get a playoff, but they're going to run it out anyway.
That's the game.
On the run. Going to throw it in the back of the end zone, and it is.
That's caught. That's the game. That's the game.
There you have it, Van and John. Yeah. What game was that? What was the year? And who were we playing? Good luck.
All right, I know this one instantly, so let me see if you know, John.
I thought I knew it. I mean, at first I thought it was the Alabama game a couple years ago when we were running out to make the kick.
Yeah, that's good.
I thought that's where they were going with the clock thing. But then it wasn't. Is it that LSU game, the one where Les Miles got fired?
Yes, I absolutely think it is because – again, we always have the clues. Whose voice are we hearing? And that's definitely Rod and Stan White.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure because, remember, he says they're going to run the play out anyway, and it's a touchdown. And LSU celebrated, and then the referees came out and said, nope, the clock expired before they even got the snap off.
Yes.
It's that weird thing where if they had had like a review like we had before in the Iron Bowl in 2019, they'd have had time to snap that ball, and they would have won the game. But because they just immediately started the clock, right? It ticked off before he could snap the ball, and so the touchdown didn't count. And like you said, what happened to Les Miles immediately?
Fired.
He's gone. All right.
Let's do the math. What year was that, though?
Oh, I know the year too. Let's see if you can get it. I know instantly because we were talking about a lot of kicks, a lot of field goals kicked that year, and I believe this is the game where that record was tied. I think this is the game where that single game record was tied.
The 2018?
Yeah, close. It was in Auburn, so it was a even numbered year.
So it was 2020?
Nope.
So what year was it? 2016?
Yeah, 16.
Yeah, 16, yeah. No, yeah, you're
that,
right. Okay.
That was before they got the big running back, what's his name, running. Remember?
Yes.
Beginning of that season, they were struggling on offense. Kerryon, I think, was hurt or something. And so we we hadn't gone to the big, what's it? I can't ever think of his name. He got a foot hurt later. Remember he was just running over teams the middle of the season, and then he got hurt against Vanderbilt, and then his foot got hurt, and he just never was the same again. But for the middle of that 16 season, he was getting like 200 yards a game. But I can't think of what his name was. He was like playing H-back for us, and I kept saying, they need to put him at tailback. Remember that?
Yes.
And they put him back there when Kerryon, I think, was hurt, and he just dominated for about 6 or 7 games. But anyway, yeah, so let's go ahead. I'm pretty sure it's 2016 LSU, but let's go ahead and hear the second thing because Jared does a good job with these. Let's see. There it is.
Okay, it's hint file time, so let's give a listen to the track without any bleeps.
The clock will start on my signal.
They got to get ready. Auburn's got to get ready. And it's got to start. So they'll spot it. And it's got to start. At the 15. And let's see. Can LSU even get a playoff? They'll give them every chance. They'll start the clock, and they don't get a playoff, but they're going to run it out anyway.
That's the game.
Etling on the run. Going to throw it in the back of the end zone. And it is.
That's caught. That's the game. That's the game.
Pretty sure you got it by now, but if not, there's always the answer file. Good luck, Van and John.
All right, let's hear his answer. Make sure we got it. I'm like 100% sure though. Here we go.
All right, Van and John, if you guessed that this was Auburn playing LSU in 2016, or as I like to think of it, the Les Miles farewell performance tour, well, then you were right. And again, I'm so sorry that I couldn't give proper credit to the AU Wishbone listener who sent me that suggestion. Again, it was weeks ago, and I just remembered, and I just couldn't find the paper trail that led me to them. Please shout out so we can get you some credit on an upcoming episode. And for those of you who want to suggest a play, once again, I'm at Yard Sale Artist Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Back to Van and John and War Eagle. Look at me
now. All right, well, that was awesome. And it slipped my mind. There was something I was going to say about it. But anyway, yeah. So, I was going to say, that was the third of the three LSU coaches that Auburn got fired. Because we got Curly Hallman fired, and then we got Jerry DiNardo fired, and then we got Les Miles fired. So
we can get an LSU coach fired. Come on.
That is one thing that we are able to accomplish. Mission accomplished is getting a dang LSU coach fired. So, let's see. I guess I'll just hit the button and then we'll find out if there's anything there.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. And what do we have on deck tonight, John?
All right. First question, a comment about the kicker thing is from Shasha on Twitter, who says, first kicker I remember watching, Gardner Jett, favorite kicker, Wes Byram.
Yeah, everybody loves Wes Byram. There's no doubt about it. Gardner Jett does show up on the list in single season percentage. He's number 7 in single season percentage from 1970 with 83.3%. But, of course, he's famous for being the kicker in the punt Bama punt game in 72.
That's true. And then this question from James Charles Taylor. Question for the Auburn Wishbone. Why was Auburn athletics so poor, with the exception of equestrian, which is not an NCAA sport, this year? I look forward to your answer.
So, in other words, why is baseball and softball and swimming, I guess, struggling so much?
Basketball, women's basketball.
Yeah,
football was.
I've heard bad things about the coaching that the softball team is getting. I've heard that they got a good recruiter but a bad on the field coach. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I think we go through cycles. Everything is cyclical, and I think right now we're in not a great place with a lot of this. But I think basketball is going to come back in a big way. I think football is going to be better next year. And Auburn women's basketball had a brand new coach today, and I think she's going to do better. Mm-hmm. So I feel good about kind of where we are in some of those sports moving forward. So I get it. I think the other thing is I just think, honestly, like Auburn generally has a great home court, home field advantage of sports, and not having one the last year has really hurt.
Yeah.
In every single sport, I think it matters. I think Auburn has good home fans, and I think it matters. And it, when it's not there, I think the absence is noticeable.
I agree. And it, we are uniquely hurt, I think, by the situation that's been going on. But I'm surprised about baseball though, because I thought the word was that the guy we hired for our baseball manager coach was supposed to be really good.
I agree. That's what I heard as well, but here we are.
Yeah. So who knows? Well, hopefully they'll get things going again. And again, I have seen people try to blame Alan Green for this, but I mean, if the coaches have great reputations and you bring them in and and it doesn't work out, I don't know how you can blame Alan Green for that. It's not like he went out and said, let me find the worst coach I can find. He found somebody that's supposed to be really good, you know? So
yes.
We'll see. A lot rides on how Harsin does. That's for sure. Because that's
he's the bull caboodle. So
yeah. Okay. What else we got?
That's it for Lister questions.
All right. Well, that's fine because we had a long delay with technical issues, so we don't have we can get the show posted and get hit the sack respectively. If you have questions coming forward for the, you know, you can send them in anytime. You don't have to wait until the day off, folks. So if you guys have questions for us, and it doesn't have to always be Auburn stuff, it can be whatever you want to ask us, just send them in to John through auwishbone@gmail.com or through or at Twitter at JK Ringer, and he kind of corrals. That's one of his, we have like a division of labor on our show, and that's one of the things that John kind of corrals is the question. So I don't know that there's any around the SEC this week. I think we'll skip that as a segment, other than just to say we're still looking forward to doing our AU Wishbone road game road trip, and we're still kind of in a holding pattern, just seeing what is possible and what we can do. Does that seem about right?
That's fair. I was doing some research today, so I'll get some stuff to you.
We're looking forward to doing something, right? So we'll figure something out. All right. And I got the sense too. I got a little inside information earlier tonight, just that it looks like Dragon Con still seems like it's on course. I know a lot of our patrons and a number of our listeners are fellow Dragon Con attendees and folks, and they sound like they're thinking about maybe doing some stuff online and some stuff in person, so that people that don't feel like crowding into the big hotels, you know, which is understandable, will still have some, you know, there'll be a little bit of both. So kind of a hybrid. And that sounds good, I think. That sounds like a good idea. So hopefully I'll be able to go and be able to see a bunch of you guys that are our patrons and our listeners. And but we'll see. And again, don't forget the new James Bond book, Bond Lexicon. Just go to whiterocketbooks.com. There's a link there. Just go to Amazon, look for Bond Lexicon, Alan Porter. Any last thoughts, John?
I think Baylor's going to win. They're pulling away now. It's not looking good for Gonzaga. But again, Auburn played both these teams, and,
they both look tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's arguable that maybe Baylor played a little harder schedule, and it's also arguable that Gonzaga kind of burned themselves out in that epic game with UCLA.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga kind of left it all on the court Saturday night.
Yeah, well, they gave us a game for the ages, so I don't blame them. I can't blame them for giving us that game, because that was incredible. Yes. That was amazing. So, all right, gang, well, we'll wrap up for there, and we're going to continue coming up with some, just like we do every year, coming up with some interesting things to have going on in the springtime. We're still working on our book that'll hopefully be out this fall, our next book, and maybe we'll find a guest or two to come on too. So I guess otherwise our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.